Thank you. What I'm going to do is kind of provide an overview, no media, but some nice graphs. We're going to provide kind of an overview of the three national survey that SAMHSA maintains to talk a little bit about what's the perspective of drug abuse with relationship to prescription pain relievers primarily. All right, so, you know, I think it's invariably kind of people ignore some of the fact that with prescription pain relievers, we've had this huge expansion of the availability of different types of pain relievers, and they're very highly effective and beneficial for treatment in a variety of conditions when used appropriately. And I think with all the hoopla you see on the TV and places about, and it's one of the things when I talk to reporters, they tend to ignore that there are some good uses for these things. So I think we don't want to go overboard and forget that there are, anybody had wisdom teeth? Yeah, Percocet was my friend during that experience. But also that this, but be clear, this is second only to marijuana and has really become a drug of concern. And it has serious side effects, including addiction, which when you talk to kids nowadays, and I still get a chance to talk to a lot of them, they don't really see this as an addictive kind of drug, and mostly because it's a nice, pretty little pill, and they don't think it's a problem. So I'm going to talk about the three national surveys that we work on and give you a little bit of background and then talk a little bit about what we're finding now. First is the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, which used to be NSDA and now is NSDA. Maybe we'll get somewhere and get an eh in there, NSDA, but we'll get there. So this is a representative both nationally and in each state, and with civilian non-institutionalized populations age 12 and older. That's pretty important because Bureau of Prisons does the institutionalized and incarcerated, Department of Defense does the people who are in the military. So we're kind of the people outside of those large systems. These are face-to-face interviews using computer-assisted self-administered technologies, and about 68,000 respondents in 2009. So response rates are about 89%. In selected households, and about 76% selected people completed the interview. Whereas places like Minnesota and Wisconsin, really high rates. I don't know, New York, I don't know, Steve, pretty low comparatively, but overall. The data in 2009 is comparable for data 2002 to 8, but not prior to 2002. We had a couple of blips in this survey that changed what we feel about it. Okay, so when you think about this, about 9.2 million people use drugs other than marijuana, according to our 2009 data, and about 7 million used psychotherapeutics. So, and one of the things that we're kind of interested in is if you look at this year, there was an uptick where we had been kind of holding steady. We're still not sure what that's about. We're trying to sort that out, but it seems in most of the drugs, except for cocaine as our one bright spot, that's still, and hallucinogens, still holding pretty steady, though there was an uptick. But if you look at, it's being driven primarily by marijuana, but there is an uptick this year in the psychotherapeutic section. And if we break it down just in the psychotherapeutics, you can see that by far the largest number are pain relievers, with tranquilizers, stimulants, and sedatives. But when you look at this, what we have is about 2.6 million new initiates a year. So that's about 7,000 people initiating prescription drug use or misusing prescription drugs a year, 7,000 a day. So it's a pretty significant area for us to be thinking about. And if you look at where people got these different drugs, these different kinds of psychotherapeutics, 53% of them got them from a friend or a relative. So it's not like we're out in the street buying them. We're kind of borrowing them from our friends. We're borrowing them from our relatives. We may be buying them from our friends and relatives. But they're coming in and they're getting them from family and friends. And then do you look at the trends here again, among people age 12 and older. So in terms of the thousands, so we're looking, as you can see across the top line, I know I should have brought my pointer. So you look across the top line, past month users It's just, you know, we've got this uptick that tracks the other line. But then if you look at dependents, that's, you know, kind of slowly moving up there too. And then looking at the number from NISDA, when you look at the 739,000 are getting some form of treatment for this. So this is not a small problem by any means. And if you look again, if we break it down just by age groups, again, you see the driving force here is really the 18 to 25-year-olds. And we, you know, these are, again, primarily pain relievers over that area. So what we're looking at is a secondary drug, only second to marijuana. Marijuana still drives the level of illicit drug use in America. It's gone on an uptick, but this is, you know, we're seeing some phenomenal growth in the numbers. So let me shift. This is the look at the Dawn survey, which looks at ERs, and essentially this monitors all drug-related ER visits in the United States, and it's a stratified sample, random sample from non-federal supported facilities, and it trends in 12 cities and also nationally. So let's take a look at some of the numbers here. And if you see this, what we see is the number of people ending up in the ER is 111% increase from 2004 to 2008. So it's going from about 144,000 to 305,000. So just under 306,000 ER visits in 2008. So again, it's a tremendous number of people that are ending up coming into ER for help. And then the most frequently used drugs here are really the pain relievers. And as you can see, you see things like in the analgesics, the oxycodone, the hydrocodone, the methadone is these are, you know, kind of growing at like 104%. These are going, the hydromorphine, though it's the smallest number, it's, look at that, that's gone from like just under 4,000 to 12,000. So there's some tremendous jumps in individual drugs here. Benzodiazepines have gone up as well, but just look at the analgesics, is we're just seeing that this is ending up in the ER more and more. So again, all right, so we have a picture. We have a picture emerging in the general population. People are using it at a much greater level. They're getting it from friends and family. It's becoming the secondary drug. They're now starting to show up in ER in pretty significant numbers. So if we see what's the next thing is what's happening in the treatment arena. So we have the treatment episode data set, which brings in the admission and the discharges from the states over the course of a year. And we're looking at client level data set on treatment admissions. These are linked files, and they come from state administrative systems, and they're crosswalks to standard data elements. Until I got to SAMHSA and I took over this job, I didn't know how long they were taking to crosswalk. So when you say somebody's coming to treatment for a pain reliever in one state, doesn't always mean the same thing in another state. This is a team that really has a lot of working, but at the end of the day, the data actually means the same thing now. I don't ever want to do their work. I'll just kind of sit in my office and do the other stuff. But what you look at is there's overall, we have a fourfold increase from 2.2 to 9.8 in total admissions for pain relievers. And again, these are primary. They may be using other drugs, but this is the primary. And then look at where it's driving. The group in the 18 to 34-year-old range. Huge increases. Now, what's that really tell you? These are the people that are going to college, they're getting into the workforce, they're having kids, they're starting to raise families. We have a real public health problem here, not just the drug use. These are people that we're depending on in our old age. Your Social Security is here. Not as fun when you see that, huh? I showed these numbers to my kids, and he says, yeah, but what does it mean? I said, don't ever use drugs. You're still going to get hurt. But the important thing to look at this, because I'm going to hurt them, but to look at this, if you look across at 98 to 2008, in this period that we've looked at, what we're seeing is that these changes cut across race, ethnicity, age, employment, education. This is not this group's drug, that group's drug, it's everybody's drug. It's making it across all of the different groups in here. So, see, I told you I didn't have, I kept to my 12. So, in summary, what we're seeing is that the misuse of abuse of prescription drug particularly the narcotic pain relievers, is really a growing problem. We're seeing it across the spectrum. People can get these easily. We had a whole thing on this, and we were talking about young kids, and I spent a lot of time talking to radio interviewers who wanted to know what we could do, and I said, well, why do you still have them in your medicine cabinet at the end of the day? If you all go home and look in your medicine cabinet, especially those of you who have been visiting your dentist for surgery, I bet you'd find there's every one of you have some bottle of something that you don't need anymore. And you can get, and kids are getting into it. It's not just the little kids, it's older kids. We've seen that the increase in misuse in ED visits and treatment admissions is cutting across all of the demographic groups. And most users of pain relievers got them from a friend or a relative for free. So let's see. Questions? That's about it. You can look at the thing, but this is where we got all our data. Yes?
So I'm trying to recall if there are questions in the NASDAQ about where they get their non-prescription drugs from.
Yeah.
And are they telling us that it is, in fact, from?
It is from their friends and is from their relatives.
And I was wondering what the trend line for misuse of these drugs is with the prescribing characteristics, if there's been any opportunity to look at these data across the trend line of prescribing patterns?
Yeah, we're having some discussions with DEA about that to get their prescribing practices. We haven't come to an agreement on how we'll do that yet. Yeah.
Are there particular parts of the country that are worse than others?
No, it really, geographically, it's really the trends are the same.
Yeah, the reason I asked that is I'm a practicing family doc. And
yeah.
In the 10 years or 15 years since I was in residency now, the difference is unbelievable. And when I got to my current job, I was like, wow, I've never seen this before. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody's in that same boat. You know, never seen that before.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things going on. First of all, remember, about 20 years ago, there was a real decision made that we were going to start addressing pain in a real concerted way. Drug companies really responded to that by coming up with a plethora. I've always wanted to find a way to use that word. A plethora of different, you know, analgesics, and they're out there, and they can be prescribed. And I often get asked, are people over-prescribing? I don't know, but I think we really need to take a public health approach and start really educating people to be much more responsible about what do you do when you get these? Do you need them all?
Let me piggyback on that, because I was a practicing physician during that era, and one of the things that was happening were physicians were getting sued if they were not providing enough pain medication. And then, of course, if they were providing too much pain medication, they were getting sued for that. And so it created quite a dilemma for prescribing physicians.
Yeah, but I think there's just a lot more out there, and it's a lot easier to get than you thought. But it again, I'm not seeing so much these pill shops. Although I do get a lot of stuff overline that you can get, although I don't know that that's real, because I've noticed a lot of the studies showing that what people are getting are not what they're paying for. Yeah?
Does street use of Suboxone be counted in these statistics, or are those measured elsewhere?
Yeah, we don't really. These are on households, so we're not doing this. We're not doing street measurement. These are only households.
Okay, but I'm saying that there's a lot of street use of Suboxone. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if those are counted in these statistics.
Again, no. None of the statistics are tracking street use. We're tracking people in the ER. We're tracking people. No, but we don't do street. We don't.
I guess it's the drug being tracked in these statistics. In other words, you're giving us oxycodone, fentanyl.
Suboxone. It hasn't shown up in significant numbers yet, but I guess if it comes up, we'll see it. It really, yeah, it probably is included, but if it's not showing up at a large enough rate, I'm looking at Michael and say, Michael, we got to look at that number. I don't know, because it won't show up unless it's a large enough number to be actually report on. If it's not big enough, we can't stand by the number. Okay, I'm feeling really better. Thanks for sharing. No. Yeah.
I have a.
Do you see a difference between rural and urban?
No. It really, the rural, urban. Early on, they were saying this is really a rural problem, but it really wasn't. What we're seeing is doesn't geographically, regionally, it just really isn't making a difference. It's growing in pretty much every sector.
I had a question as to whether, in terms of tracking this, there are any difficulties by the fact that certain medications, such as oxycodone, are not detected at a high level with the standard drug screenings that are used.
Yeah, these are self-report, and we're not doing objective measurement. But I will tell you the work we do to look at objective measurement, we actually have higher reporting rates because when we've done some of the testing, most of these drugs leave fairly rapidly. So, and I think the data is pretty clear that self-report, the way that we've been doing, we've done a number of methodological pieces on it, and the self-report is pretty strong. We're pretty comfortable with what we're getting. Okay, any other questions? Okay. I will turn on the next question.